You're listening to Cosmic Tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me say that again.
Cosmic Tonic.
Hello. Thanks for tuning into the Cosmic Tonic podcast. In this episode, we speak with astrologer Kira Taborn about sex and astrology. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, or share the podcast with your friends. We appreciate it. And there's a couple different ways you can listen to us. One way is on your favorite podcast app or by subscribing to us on YouTube. As you know, we are committed to bringing you the best content related to astrology and the occult. We are fully funded by viewer support. So please donate to our podcast by visiting the link at the bottom of our homepage at cosmictonic.com. For those of you who've donated, thank you so much. It really helps us keep this podcast going. Thanks again for being here, and we hope you enjoy the show.
All right. So we are really excited to have Kira Taborn on the podcast, and we are going to talk about sex and astrology. So Kira is an astrologer, an educator, a consultant, as well as an author. And you also are the co-founder of Cusp, which is an astrology app that, from what I can see, seems to really have a focus on romance and or Eros and love and astrology, and just connections between people. So maybe, Kira, I'll let you come in and flesh out that intro. If you have anything to add that feels pressing about what you want to share with what your focus is right now with Cusp or just you as an astrologer and your approach to astrology.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Cusp is basically exactly what you said. It's an astrology app that's very focused on love and connections. We kind of are broad in that definition, in that it's not just romantic love. It's not just sex. It's very much just love for, I like to say it's like the philosophy of love, like living your life through this lens of love. So a lot of it is self-love, actually, because that's kind of what it all comes back down to anyway. But yeah, we have daily horoscopes that are super well written, and I like to think of it more as like a nice little nugget of wisdom that you get every morning, written by awesome astrologers. And then we also have our compatibility reports, which is a really fun feature. You can check your friendship compatibility with someone, your sexual compatibility, and your romantic compatibility. And they're really well written, detailed reports. And then you also can check just like your placement overviews and how each of your planets sort of relate to, or looking at each of your planetary placements from like a love oriented lens as well. We have those for your sun, moon, rising, Mercury, Venus, and Mars right now. So
that's amazing. And I am just so curious, what catalyzed this idea? What was the inspiration?
You know, it's sort of like came together. It was my co-founder's original idea, and he sort of found me and was like, I want to make this app. Would you want to partner with me? And I was like, actually, yeah. You know, like I'm a very, I would say, relationship oriented person, and like always been a hopeless romantic my whole life. I'm Venus in Libra, Venus square Neptune, and I remember being like a toddler and just having crushes. So the idea of blending, you know, my love for astrology with my love for love was just kind of like, yeah, of course I'm going to say yes to this. And then from there, we really were figuring out like what we were going to do with the app. And we just really wanted it to be about connection and figuring out how to foster more connections between people, and also just impart that daily wisdom into their lives too. That I think can be really helpful for a lot of folks, especially because the way that we write, the way that the Cusp content is, it's not it's not fear-mongerish, you know, it's not the type of stuff that's going to like make you anxious about your day. It's really giving you, it's really supportive, I would say.
Yeah, I find that so beautiful. I just think love is such a central theme of all of our lives. We're wired to connect in so many ways. And I just spend so much of my time thinking about love and friendship, like almost 24/7. So yeah.
That's, I think that's another cool thing about the app is that it is so much also about friendship too. And again, like all types of connections, which is why we really wanted to prioritize making sure we had these like non-romantic, non-sexual aspects of love too. Because not everyone has sex and not everyone is dating, you know? and I think the love that we have for our friends is like, takes up so much of our lives as well. So it definitely deserves to have just as much stage time, I think, as sex and romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really inclusive. And it also, like, as we start thinking of astrology, it feels like it can bring in the other too, like our love of animals or even just our relationship with the wider world or the world soul in some way. And definitely. I don't want to start diving into houses, but yeah, it makes me think of ritual too. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, there's a lot there, and it's just like a fertile ground for us to keep playing with too. So it's an exciting space to be in.
So I want to talk about how you use astrology as a tool to understand and think about and talk about sex, romance, love of all stripes. But maybe before we talk about how you use it, I'd love to talk about how you don't use it. Like, how do you not use astrology to think about sex?
Oh, that's a good question. It's hard because I use astrology for so much. I think like, I don't tend to like rule people out based on their astrology. I think more so than not, I'm always just curious to see how things are going to play out, you know, and curious to see how, like my chart or my placements would mesh with another person's. I'm not going to lie, there's definitely some particular placements that I've had way too much experience with that I'm okay with not trying out anymore. But yeah, in general, it's always just like a fun, it's fun, I think, especially to kind of explore patterns too. Like, you know, oh, everyone I've had sex with in the past year has Mars in a fixed sign, you know, and same, you know, like, what does that mean? And yeah, seeing how the ways that people light up your chart. So yeah, I guess that's not really a good answer to your question, because I still can't really put my finger on like what I don't use it for, because I literally use it for anything from like when to send a text message to someone about hooking up to like, you know, picking the day and time of a date, you know, so I use it so much. Yeah.
I love that you elect like hookup texts. That's amazing. okay. I want to ask about that, but let me back up. I guess what I mean is like, you know, those articles in, I'm not going to name the magazine, but so many magazines where it's like, oh, your sun sign is in Libra and their sun sign is in, I don't know, Taurus. And therefore you'll never, I mean, I know they're both Venus rule signs, so there is some meshing actually, but therefore you will never have chemistry because you're just different people. Like, are there advisories that you might have for ways not to use this, especially when it's coming down to the sun sign? Cause that can be so vague.
Yeah. I mean, my parents are like a prime example of like, I'm sure there's so many people out here who have that, like, you know, there was someone that, you know, pop astrology might say that they would never connect with. My parents are a Scorpio Sag couple, and they've been together for over 30 years, you know? So it's like, yeah, I, That's always been something. The sun sign compatibility has always been something I kind of like side eye, but at the same time, there's some validity to it, you know, and there's some, it doesn't make or break it. Usually it's that one placement usually is in the deal breaker. But I would say, I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, but I do have sort of, not rules, but kind of guidelines around what sun signs might not be compatible with you. And that's usually, and again, this is not always, but I tend to say like people whose suns fall in your dark houses, meaning your 12th house, 8th house, 2nd or 6th, but specifically the 12th and the 8th houses, might not, you might not want their light turning on, you know, your dark spots. Cause that really is something that can tend to happen. You know, someone sheds light, someone's sun falls in your 12th house, for instance, it's like they're turning the light on in a place that's sometimes you want to keep a little dark, you know, or, you know, the 8th house too. It's like they're bringing light to, a part of your life that can, it isn't always fun, you know, isn't always like a place where you want the lights on. Not to say that you should hide all the time, those 12th house, 8th house things, but yeah, that's something that that's kind of like a general rule I tend to follow. Of course that does. I mean, my 8th house is Libra. I've been with way too many Libras, you know? so it's not like a hard and fast rule, but I think I've come to that because of that, you know, having experienced so many dark house sinistry connections. It's, you can learn a lot and it's really powerful, but at the same time, maybe not best for the long term, not all the time.
Well, and there's like learning and growing from the experience. And then there's just something to be said for ease and chemistry, right? And things exactly. Being fairly natural.
yeah, exactly that.
Well, I was thinking we could talk a little bit how you do use astrology to qualify relationships and especially sex, since that's what we're here to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I'm when it comes down to sex, I'm always looking at the fifth house and its ruler. That's like my number one. And when it comes to sex between two people, it's cool to see how the ruler of one person's fifth house interacts with the ruler of another person's fifth house. That's something that I've been thinking a lot about. And, you know, we definitely incorporated that into our compatibility reports, just in general, the fifth house, and how fifth house synastry works between two people. But yeah, the fifth house is where we find sex, is where we find pleasure, entertainment, fun. I like to say it's what turns you on, what feels good, what sparks joy. So really examining the sign there, if you have planets there too, that's going to give you a lot of information. But that sign and the planet that rules that sign, well, that planet is responsible for bringing pleasure into your life and for making you feel good. So seeing like, again, how that planet interacts with the other person's fifth house planet is a really good place to start, I think. Someone I've been sort of seeing for a while, I guess, almost 2 years, kind of on and off, are the rulers of both of our fifth houses are trying each other's. And it's been the best sexual relationship of my life. You know, it's pretty great just in terms of the ease, I think, which is very much the relationship of a trine. You know, it's just easy. It just works. So looking for something like that. And this is someone who otherwise you would look at our two charts and be like, how is this working? This is someone who's like super Gemini, like super, super Gemini. I'm super Scorpio, you know, like we don't have a lot on the surface that you would think makes us compatible. But, once you really get into it, you can kind of see where everything lines up. But yeah, that's one thing in particular is the fifth house stuff just works really well. So yeah, that's one thing. And of course, you know, you always you always want to look at you as well, you and your chart, which is the ruler of your first house. So the first house really describes like you and your identity, and that planet that rules it is, I like to say, it's like your avatar. So that's going to really speak to your overall identity and vibe, but then seeing how that again interacts with the other person's first house ruler. And maybe there's connection between their fifth house ruler and your first house ruler, or vice versa. That's always fun stuff to look at. And then I always go to Venus. Venus is really big when it comes to not just love and connection, but sex too. You could say it's both Venus and Mars that are responsible for sex. I definitely lean towards Venus specifically when it comes to the connecting part, like how you even get together is Venus, you know, the friction and the tension that's created when it comes to desire and like attraction and going after what you want. That's when you kind of bring Mars in, but Venus really is responsible for bringing you together with another person. It's that glue. So I love to look at Venus and Venus signs. That is another part of cusp that we incorporate into both our romantic compatibility reports and our sexual compatibility reports. And yeah, I mean, just looking at how your Venuses interact is like huge, I think. Venus really, again, speaks to what we desire and what we're attracted to, as well as what's attractive about us. And so I find Venus to be a very magnetic planet. If you even just think about like seeing Venus in the night sky or the pre-dawn sky, it's just like the brightest, most beautiful star. You can't help but like stay, you're drawn to it. You're attracted to it. So that's sort of what Venus is for all of us. And our particular flavors of Venus. If you're struggling with sex, I would say, and just like figuring out what works for you, I would absolutely do a deep dive into your fifth house and the planet that rules it, and then also your Venus sign, because both are really going to speak to what you need to feel good. For me, those two planets, the ruler of my fifth house and my Venus, are exactly opposite one another. So, you know, Aries moon ruling my fifth and Venus in Libra. And it's definitely like, that's something I've been kind of exploring over the past couple years. It's like, how do I reconcile that opposition? Oppositions are, you know, they require choices. They require like reconciliation in some ways. So, how do I reconcile my like selfish, you know, Aries moon nature with like my super relational Venus and Libra nature? And yeah, both speak to what I need and desire when it comes to both sex and romance and relationships. Looking at both of those, and then Mars, your Mars sign is going to definitely speak to more of like how you go after what you're desiring. Venus is what you desire. Mars is going to say like, okay, how do you go get it? How are you going out and acquiring that? I think Mars also, when we're talking about sex specifically, Mars is going to speak to the energy level or the energy output, I guess you could say, when it comes to sex. And you know, look at how your Mars and Venus are interplaying with one another or not. You know, for me, my Mars and Venus don't see each other. I have Mars in Scorpio, Venus in Libra. So they're both really strong. They're both in domicile, but I tend to have a hard time with holding both at once. Like I'm either very much in my Mars or I'm very much in my Venus. And for other people, that's not so much the case. You know, for some people, like this person I have been seeing, they have Mars Venus conjunction, you know? So it's like the way that they do their give and take, their attraction and going after it is so intertwined. It's like kind of one and the same. It's so different from the way that I go about it, which has been really interesting to to just like work with and experience. So Mars is important too. And then you, of course, you have to look at how just the condition of all these planets in your chart and what other planets they're interacting with that kind of might inhibit some of these things or help fuel some of these things. Like, say you have Venus either square or opposite Saturn, you know, that's really gonna color how you go about attraction and desire. There might be more apprehension around those things, or there might be just a more seriousness or reverence, you know, for these things. Or, you know, maybe Mars is an aspect to your Venus and a square opposition or something, and that might bring some again, like trepidation around going after what you want, because you might feel like, I think when people have malefics, Mars and Saturn, in a hard aspect to Venus, it kind of feels like there's always going to be a catch, you know, like, yeah, I can go after this, but like, yeah, what's the catch, you know? And so it can kind of create some fear around going after for what you desire. And that can require some specific, you know, types of healing to move through that. But yeah, once you get deeper into it, you can kind of explore that. But in general, that's really what I'm looking at, is like fifth house ruler, Venus and Mars.
And so you've talked a lot about rulerships and about key planets. How do you work with planets in the fifth? Like, yeah, that can send some mixed signals, speaking from experience.
Definitely. Yeah. How do I say this without being weird? And I say that because I feel like I do, like the way my brain does astrology is like, it can be so almost, I don't want to say clinical, but mathematical almost. And so the way I always go, okay, so what does that planet represent? And what is it ruling? Cause it's bringing those topics to your fifth house. But in general, yeah, it's just where that archetype kind of lives in your life. So say it's Saturn. I know some Saturn in the fifth house people. There's going to be a seriousness, I think, and again, a reverence to the things that bring you joy and pleasure, you know, and potentially it's going to take time to figure it out, right? And I think like people with Saturn in the fifth, their Saturn return is so big for that, like figuring out, okay, what does it mean to like, to really prioritize pleasure, or what does pleasure actually mean in my life? Because it tends to like be a very long process of figuring that out. I mean, that can be the case for a lot of people, but, I think again, with Saturn in the fifth, there can be this, apprehension towards like exploring and experiencing pleasure and sex and all that, because yeah, there's just, again, that there's like a weightiness to it, for whatever reason, you know, for that person. Whereas if it's like, you know, Venus in the fifth is such a great placement, regardless of how Venus is doing, you know, regardless of Venus's dignity, because Venus rejoices there in the fifth house. It's a place that it does really well. And the fifth house sort of gets a lot of its meaning from Venus. So Venus in the fifth tends to be a really lovely placement for people. I see it play out so much when it comes to just being an artist and a creative, but that energy center of creation is the same that, you know, makes us babies and brings us orgasms. And so there's just can be, I think of Venus in the fifth, I think of fertility, not necessarily for, you know, having babies, but for, for giving birth to new things and for just being able to tap into, again, like pleasure and enjoyment in a way that just comes more naturally, I think, for Venus in the fifth. But yeah, does that kind of answer your question? I will just say people with planets in the fifth, especially like the sun or the moon, it's like you're, if it's your chart ruler, the ruler of your first house, it's like you're here to have fun, you know, like you're here to just like be someone who experiences pleasure and joy and go after that. So like when there's planets in the fifth, that's like, even if it's Saturn, I would say like it's part of your, it's part of your mission to just like have fun. And that can often include sex for a lot of people.
We've been talking a lot about the fifth house. We mentioned the first house. We mentioned the eighth house, a little bit about the 12th. So why don't we use this as a segue to really go around the chart and talk about the houses and how they pertain to sex.
Yeah.
Love to. Yeah. I mean, I think that you did quite a great job on talking about the first house, but if there's anything anyone wants to add to that.
When it comes to the first house, that's so much about your body too. Yeah. It's really going to speak to just your general body needs. So one thing that I just want to mention, because we're talking about sex, is people with Jupiter in the first house tend to be very juicy or well endowed, you could say.
Voluptuous.
Very voluptuous. Yeah. Yeah.
Allies.
Yes. Yes. And that definitely extends to sexual organs as well, tends to be. And I would say just like, yeah, Jupiterian people in general tend to be a little bit more juicy. Jupiter rules the juices of of our, you know, bodily fluids, basically, including, you know, the fruit, the juices in our fruits and all of that. So all of those type of fluids. So yeah, just that's kind of what made me think of. And then I guess, yeah, the ruler of your first house is also going to kind of speak to your stamina too, and just like your overall vitality and energy. So yeah, first house, body for sure. Second house, was someone going to say something?
I do want to say a little bit about the first, because we were talking about that self-love component. And I also think it's so interesting that it trines the fifth house. Mm-hmm. And I've just been getting a huge overhaul because I'm Cap fifth house. And so the Venus retrograde's been going mm-hmm. through that. So I've thought about it a lot. And then I was just also thinking, well, I have Venus in the first as well. And so through my body, I experience a ton of self-love or self-pleasure and sensuality through like the movement of my body, and then it trining the fifth with creativity. But I was also thinking how there's this oscillation or polarity. I did a little drawing beforehand of self and other, you know, and how in intimate, really soulful relationships, I think there has to be, I talk a lot about this on the podcast, this sovereignty in ourselves, a deep interiority and intimacy with who I am, and knowing thyself, to then be able to extend and lean into that seventh house, any one-on-one relationship, whether it's romantic or a great friendship, that I can share in the nourishment and the moisture of that, all the while self-actualizing with all of the chart, if that makes sense. So I was just seeing this really juicy dance between self and other that just wanted to speak. Well, and then of course there's that opposition too with the first and the seventh. That's hard to reconcile because I have Venus moon mm-hmm. opposing in those houses.
I hear you. Venus moon opposition. We could talk about that. We could definitely talk about that. But yeah, I think that's a really great point about the first. And yeah, just the trine to the fifth, and the fifth kind of being this natural, literally like the natural expression of like us and our body. It's literally like what we can give birth to, right? The fifth house. And so I just love what you said about needing to know oneself before connecting with the other. It just made me think about how, yeah, we kind of have to go through that process of figuring out what we love too, like what our desires are outside of what we want to do for others, which feels like that first to fifth before we get to the seventh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
I also just want to say, like, Kestrel, you mentioned self-love and self-pleasure, but, like, let's also call a spade a spade. I think masturbation would belong partly in the first house. And, like, you can have a sex life without partners. Mm-hmm. And so that feels very, like, first house to me, which is maybe a good segue into the second house, too.
That's such a great point. I love that. Yeah. Second house... I mean, immediately I think sex toys. I don't know about you guys. It's just like, you know, what are our things, you know, what are the things that we're using? And also I guess that can extend to like money too. And I guess just our resources in general, you could say. Yeah. For me, the ruler of my fifth house is in my second house. But in general, yeah, I think the second house, we can really talk about things like, our stuff, the stuff that we're using. And I also kind of think of the second house as almost like our briefcase, like what we're bringing to the table as far as like our own resources. What's coming up for you guys? Sex toys is like the main thing that comes up for me.
Well, I know. And I had all these yummy associations because I'm Libra second house, but I was wondering, because I think a lot about the second house related to self-worth and how self-worth plays into our sexuality, you know, and expression around it too. Does anybody else have thoughts about that?
I feel like that's a great point. And it reminds me of something else I think about often with the second house is like our resources extend farther than just like our, you know, physical things or even money. Like our time is very much a huge resource that we have that, you know, I think the second house will kind of speak to our capacity for giving and receiving, I guess you could say, our time and,
could be our skills too in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Our confidence, which that's a really tricky one. I feel sensitive around that because, you know, there's a lot of things that have come up for people around attachment that make it hard to be vulnerable and risk being wounded in that area. Definitely. Well, and money and power seems to come up too. Mm-hmm. Although this is not an original idea. This came from Francis Weller, but he was kind of challenging things around the polarity of love and power. And he was kind of contemplating how love without power can really be sentimentality and how power without love can be that domination. But it seems like there might be a bit of that power play that could come up in that house.
Yeah, that's definitely something to sit with. Wow. Without power without love. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the shadow of, how one could overshadow the other sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think also second house, this is kind of like a second house, eighth house polarity thing, but just the transactional types of relationships, right? Like that comes up a lot with second house, eighth house and, maybe issues surrounding like transactional sex, which isn't bad in and of itself, right? As long as it's reciprocal and it is a transaction in some ways, you know, it can be seen that way. And again, it doesn't mean it's bad necessarily. We can also talk about sex work too, and how that's like a great transactional, a great example of transactional sex.
Yeah. I mean, I think sex work is really interesting and can fit in actually so many houses, but the second included, like I always forget the Greek words for the houses except for the second, because for some reason it makes so much sense to me. The Greek word for the second house is bios, which is life, right? It's our livelihood. So like if sex is part of our livelihood, then absolutely that roots into the second in some way. Mm. I love too what you said, Kira, about time, because like I think about new parents too. Like who has the time? Well, you often hear that new parents do not have the time or energy to continue their sexual life because all of that time and energy is going towards this you know, very vulnerable and like young human.
Yeah.
So having time and energy, that does, I think, play a role. But I also just, I do think of the second as this extension of the first. So it's, yeah, like what are the oils, the candles, the music, the lingerie maybe, or whatever, the handcuffs, whatever, you know, wherever your sexual desires take you, but like the accessorizing.
Yeah. I love the lingerie. That's a great one to bring up too.
Anyone else have anything to add for the second, or should we move to the third?
Move to the third.
Yeah. I mean, this is the house of the goddess. This is where the moon rejoices. So this is where I think of like our rituals, and also just like our space, you know, like I think of the third house as our local space. So how are we creating an atmosphere for love, for lovemaking? This comes up a lot for me because I have Taurus third house. So Venus rules my third, and I'm like very, very, I need good music playing. I need candles lit. You know, like I'm very much that person. I need the atmosphere to be top notch, like beautiful, aesthetically pleasing, which is why I think this is probably from the moon ruling my fifth too, but like, I like to have sex in my own space, you know, because I know I'm going to make the vibe right, you know? But yeah, I think of that when I think of the third house, like how are you creating the vibe? And then also the third house, I call it the house of technical skills too. So like, what skills are you bringing? How are you? Yeah. Are there any particular like methods, or that's something that comes up for me. It's just like technical skills, which can be, you know, it reminds me of like people who have probably more involved sex lives that involve things like, I don't know, machines or things like that, or even skills needed for like, you could like bondage, you know, or rope play, or there's lots of different literal technical skills you might need for the type of sex you have. And I think that falls in the third house. And then of course, communication, you know, how are we communicating with each other? Your Mercury signs will definitely speak a lot to that. But I think of the third house more of like how we're connecting to and with our local space, and how we're kind of moving through the world, with particular skills that we have. And one tends to be communication. So yeah, that's another big one as well. But for the third house, I tend to lean more towards the lunar themes around like your space and creating the vibe.
It makes me think too with communication, but also communication technologies, like dating apps. Like who's in your neighborhood that you're going to find to, you know, and then, you know, sexting, or like the different ways that foreplay can be verbal and maybe even only verbal, or like remote sex, like having sex with each other, you know, when you're actually on different sides of the country or whatever, like through Skype or FaceTime or what have you, like that all feels like it could be third house too.
Yeah. Sexting is such a good one. That's spot on. Yeah. And I think like also like probably sending nudes, or like, FaceTime, cyber sex. Remember that term, cyber sex? No one says that anymore, because it's like, yeah, everyone's having sex online, I guess, at this point. But yeah, all of that feels very third house too.
Yeah. Well, it also, even though it has such a lunar component, there's also the word sapiosexual comes to mind, just how much of sex happens in the mind and the imagination and fantasy, and, you know, how you play that out, and also the being consensual around it as well.
I just thought of one. Sex in road, like roadhead. sex in cars, sex in, you know, while traveling, I think is another one.
Oh, yeah. Bond movies do a good job of that.
Or in parks.
Yeah. Like, I was going to say public sex, but that feels a little bit more tenth in some ways, but it's more like, yeah, getting out in your, like, sex on the beach, sex in, yeah, in the forest, like, environmental sex.
Sex in the wild.
Yeah.
Best place.
Truly, sex in the forest, best.
With other or by yourself.
Yeah. Again, as someone who has a Venus rule of third house, I'm like all about it.
Yeah, it's so on the senses.
Yeah.
Not going to go into detail, but unless you're somewhere with ticks, let me just say that.
Yeah, please make sure you're at least putting a blanket down at the very least.
A jacket.
Fourth house?
Yeah, your home, I guess. it has a lot to do with like feeling safe too, and like feeling, feeling supported and grounded. And just like where you're at, I think as well. I think the fourth house is a little bit more about your foundation and like how you're rooted and where you're at. But it's certainly like your home too, you know, how you're creating a space of a safe container, you could say.
That makes a lot of sense. And that foundational just seems to piggyback off it. That is that, or those early attachment styles, what sort of information you get about connection early on and how that sets you up, you know, what your trepidations might be towards connecting with another, where it gets difficult and what sort of healing still needs to take place, or how you're showing up in the presence of yourself in a healing relationship. And honoring the growth and the personal growth of self and another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think so many relationships get tripped up around that. You know, we're always bringing our early childhood stuff with us, which happens in that early home, which not everybody gets to see. I always think of that fourth house of like, who really gets to see my fourth house?
Yeah, it's so private. It's the most private space in the chart. So yeah, that's a really great point. I love that what you said about just like our early childhood attachments. I think that's probably hits the nail on the head in regards to the fourth house and sex and like, yeah, what were those patterning that we come into it with.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of trauma that can live in the fourth house in relationship to sex. Mm-hmm. So if you're having trouble in your sex life or you're having trouble in how you relate to sex, typically, like you said, Kestrel, it does relate to what's been projected onto us as children. So really visiting the fourth house and really developing a relationship with whatever your fourth house is and the planets that are in your fourth house will give you a lot of information about how you view sex. And also it's a place where in certain major life transits that happen, Saturn return, or even midlife transits that happen, it's a place of letting go a lot to those attachments and really individuating from whatever those projections were in order to fulfill yourself and fulfill yourself in so many aspects of life, but especially sexually.
Yeah, I feel like the fourth house is kind of where we come home to ourselves, you know, it's like where we really reroute into where we came from. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there is so much healing that can happen when exploring your fourth house. And I think, especially if you're feeling kind of untethered in some ways too, especially around sex, like really digging into your fourth house can help. And figuring out how to reroute and reground yourself. Because I think it is like a really, yeah, you need that sort of rerooting in order to be able to figure out what you love and what is pleasurable for you. You kind of have to, you have to come from to that from a really safe, grounded place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love what you said at the beginning, Kira, around security, because like the people you let into your home, that's a really vulnerable place, actually, even just on the level of privacy of like, I don't want to just let anybody see what I keep, what is intimate and private for me. Even
you don't want anyone to see your sex toys.
Danger.
They're so beautiful these days. You can have them front and center.
Yeah, true. Now that I just wanted to make a quick note on like fourth house sinistry too, because I found over the past couple years that that's been so such an important, like so many important connections. My fourth house was Gemini, and that person I've been seeing is like, you know, Gemini stellium. And I've just realized over the years that like people who, you know, who's rising or whatever sits in my fourth house, feel the type of comfort and safety I feel with those people is like, it's kind of life-changing, you know, realizing that. And so, yeah, I just wanted to say that around sinistry too, like fourth house sinistry can be so powerful because it can just feel so safe, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love that. So we've talked a lot about the fifth, but why don't we put it in a nutshell, as it were?
Yeah. Fifth house, what turns you on? You know, like what, it's the things that just feel good. And it's not necessarily just sexual, or it doesn't have to be just sexual, but it's literally like, I think when you're in fifth house transits, or say your fifth house is activated by perfection, like if you're 16 or 28 or 40 or 52, it's going to be a year where you get to really explore just like the things that feel good for you. And this make you, I like to say, it's also like what sparks joy, you know, that phrase. It's whether it's like just dancing in front of the mirror, like, or getting stoned and taking long walks, which is for me, that's what sparks joy for me. But yeah, like it's those little things. And I think it's so important to figure out what that is for you outside of sex with other people, because that's going to make your sex life and just your life so much better when you know what that is outside of, you know, I think we'll talk about the eighth, but like the second house, eighth house stuff is kind of like what we're, it's that giving and receiving part of sex. Whereas like the fifth house is just like, what is pleasurable to you? You know, like what do you need to get off? And it's about you. It's not about the other. So just kind of, yeah, prioritizing your wants and needs and desires when it comes to the fifth house. Cause it is just about you.
I feel like it's also romance in that Venusian way. And it makes me think, we forgot to mention flirting maybe for the third house, but I feel like flirting could go in the fifth or the third. There's that communication side of it, that mental stimulation, but also just the, yeah, like when you're romancing someone, or when you're, what you need to feel romance, that you need to feel in the mood or like tantalized, or I think there could be an argument for the fifth house being foreplay as well, or just like, like you said, what is just purely pleasurable.
Definitely. Yeah. I love that. I love foreplay there and flirting too. I feel like I really like foreplay there for the fifth house. That works a lot. Yeah. It's the stuff again, it's like, what's turning you on? What's like getting that light, sparking that fire in you.
Serving the muse.
So the sixth house.
Sixth.
Oh, are you going to add something to the fifth, Jasmine?
No, I was going to move it along.
Yeah.
You could get lost in the fifth house.
Sixth house and sex. I mean, this to me is like service. It's like how you're of service to the other. And whether you're a service top or a service bottom, or you're just one that loves to please. I think this is where we find those things. And also, I think it's the aftercare too. It's how we're taking care of each other after sex. And that comes from like anything from, you know, the cuddling and holding and all that, but also it goes down to like, how are, you know, do you want to have a snack afterwards? Like, do you, you know, can I get the shower running for you? Like it's all of those little things that we do to kind of maintain. I think of the sixth house as like a maintenance place, you know? So it's like maintaining the connection outside of the literal sex. And I would also say it's like how we incorporate sex into our everyday, into our lifestyle, you know? Maybe if you have like the ruler of the fifth and the sixth or something, it's like, maybe you schedule sex, you know, maybe that's something that, you know, you need, that you feel like you need to incorporate into your routines or to your day-to-day life.
And I was thinking health too, like the health of our bodies and how we maintain that and attend to that, and hormones.
Yeah.
We're cycles as women.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
There are a lot of ways too, that we can be, that our health can compromise our sex lives or our desire, our ability to feel, they interfere with our pleasure. And that can be like sex related, so-called, I'm using air quotes here, but dysfunctioning or malfunctioning, or it could just be any kind of health situation that's maybe not making you feel super sexy right now, or making you, maybe you have other priorities. I think that could go in the sixth too. But I also love this idea of sex as service. And it makes me think of, again, sex work, and also that archetype of the sacred prostitute, and like, you know, sex maybe having this, an element of the divine about it, in that ability to accept, like to fully accept the other, and what a gift that can provide for the other, and how that's part of the work for many people, for many sex workers. It's that ability to accept the other and to take the other in.
Yeah. I love that. I think about that a lot when it comes to the asteroid Vesta, and its relationship to sex and sex work and sacred sexuality, and just the ability to, I won't get into it, but it's exactly what you said, like the sixth house in relation to sex work, and how it is like an ultimate service, and it's a service through like the physical vessel. Not that it's just physical, but yeah, it is a sacred, I mean, I think it is very much sacred work. I love that. Also, I was going to say just one more sixth house thing, sex with coworkers. Which happens a lot with sixth house people. There's a lot of people, ruler of the seventh and the sixth, or ruler of the fifth and the sixth, or ruler of the sixth and the fifth or seventh or whatever, that like tend to, like, that's where they meet people. Like they meet people at work, you know, and they tend to have sex with their coworkers. And I'm jealous of those people. I never really had that. Seems fun.
Well, when we get around to the 11th house, we'll talk about how that plays out in the work environment after you do it.
But yeah.
What about the 7th?
Yeah, I mean,
we talked about this though.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I feel like the 7th is like, that's the other. That's your partner, you know. So really looking at that sign and the planet that rules it as like the avatar of the person that you're with, whether it's, you know, a long-term relationship or just a hookup, they're kind of represented by that planet. And so just being able to really kind of understand, or at least like, you know, attempt to understand the other person through that. But yeah, the 7th house is those more one-on-one, I would say even like contractual type of relationships. So that usually means there's some sort of agreement when it comes to a seventh house relationship, whether it's like a spoken or unspoken. And yeah, this is, it's just, I don't know. I just think of it as like the house of the other. My chart ruler is in the seventh, and that's kind of where I'm always at. It's like, it's really about the relationship in and of itself and forming those connections.
It makes me think too of commitment, and then, you know, the commitment could mean many different things for many different people, but like what you say, it's whatever that tacit or spoken agreement is. And that agreement might include many, like more than one partner, or it might just be that one person, but it's sort of that what you're committing to, what sort of implicit vows are there, mm-hmm. as it were. It also makes me think of the longer term relationship and how sex evolves and maybe it can be harder to keep that fresh. That fifth house freshness you need to really, I imagine, like work to keep that going in the seventh house when it's, you know, you're looking at 10 years, 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Yeah. I love that about commitment, especially. Yeah, it's like the seventh house is like the equalizer, right? It's where the sun sets. It's where, you know, there's like this level playing field almost, when it comes to the seventh. So yeah, it's where we do have to make those sort of contractual, agreements with others around how we're going to treat each other and, you know, what we're going to be able to provide for one another and all of that. Seventh house is like, I feel like not very sexy, even though
it's not,
even though it's like relationship oriented. It's so, yeah, it's like a very serious place, like, in a lot of ways.
It's like, how are we getting our needs met, you know, and how does that show up archetypally for us? And as you were talking, I was just thinking about my own seventh house. My seventh house is Pisces, but in order for me to make that long-term commitment to somebody, my emotional needs need to be met. Pisces being such an emotional sign, being mm-hmm. made up of mutable water. And so I think about how that might vary elementally with what you need from your partner in terms of the seventh house needs mm-hmm. and wants, you know?
I love that, because I'm Pisces rising, so mine's Virgo, and I need like the practical, like reliable Virgo
tangible.
Yeah, that's tangible, exactly. Yeah, that's so real.
Yeah, and relationships thrive with that. And then the other part is that novelty, like how do you keep the adventure and the spice, you know, of life continuing in those long-term relationships and who we are when we begin a relationship and how we evolve with the other. You know, oftentimes there can be so much compromise at the beginning, and then people start to really present, no, this is who I am. And then can we have grace? And, you know, it's interesting too, Jazz, to hear you talk about that Pisces with the emotional component, but also it makes my seventh house really susceptible to just really loving so many people, and how that can compete with my marriage or that committed relationship, and how the other one-on-one relationships are so important for me as well, especially with women.
That reminds me, I was going to say earlier, like, this is where we find all relationships, including like polyamory or any sort of, you know, open, any sort of relationship you have with other people. So it's not just our romantic relationships, or maybe it's multiple romantic relationships or what have you, but yeah, it's really where we have to sort of like you said, like have these sort of agreements with people, and making sure that, you know, the agreements that you have with certain people kind of level out with the agreements that you have with other people. And yeah, it's a very, like I said, contractual place where we really have to figure out how to be on level playing field with everyone that we're connecting with. I find a lot of like poly people, that have seventh house stuff, whether it's, you know, even like Saturn in the seventh, you know, it's like this really seriousness and reverence for the relationships that they make. It doesn't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
the eighth house, you know, I think modern astrology often puts sex here. I'm very vehemently against that. just as a, you know, base signification for the eighth house, because this is a place of decline. You know, this is the gate of Hades. This is the entrance to hell, you know? So this is where, it's not inherently a sexy place, I should say. It doesn't mean that you can't find sex here. And I'm someone of Venus here. So, you know, sex is very much connected to the eighth house for me, but I'm pretty much against that being a general signification of the eighth house. But what you do find here is trauma, you know, and pain and the type of stuff that we have to spend a lot of time and energy and space to work through. And also where we need to rely on others to help us work through a lot of stuff. So I call the eighth house a therapy house. it's very much where we kind of, again, can find support from others. But also, yeah, this is also where we find what other people are bringing to the table and in terms of their resources. So like, this is where, you know, our second house is what we're bringing. It's our resources. Eighth house is what the partner is bringing to the table. And like, for instance, I have Venus and Libra here, and like almost everyone I connect with seriously is like, has a really strong connection to music, right? Which is very Venus and Libra. And so it's like, I get a lot of Venusian stuff from other people, from my sexual partners, because that's, yeah, people are bringing the Venus to me, right? So yeah, I think the eighth house can be that. It's also are those power dynamics too. And I think that in a really healthy, ideal eighth house situation is reciprocal, you know, gifting and receiving. But that's not always the case, right? And sometimes that doesn't look, it's not as black and white as what we might want, right? But what someone might be bringing a lot of material resources, while the other person's bringing a lot more, maybe emotional or psychological resources, that in that relationship, you know, is equal. It is reciprocal. But I think oftentimes in the eighth house, we figure out like what's not balanced and equal. And yeah, it's kind of a space where we kind of have to work through a lot of stuff, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you highlighted around mental health and trauma, it also reminds me, it's the place where we will face everything we love, we will lose, mm-hmm. the death component.
Yeah.
As well. And the grief from that, you know.
Yeah, grief is a really big one. And yeah, like loss, exactly. It's like you can't bring everything into hell with you, you know. You can't bring when you're dying, you can't bring it all with you. So it's very much about letting go as well. And yeah, you know, I find the eighth house has a lot to do with our resentments too, and also like our burdens. I think of it as like our baggage in a lot of ways too, or specifically where our baggage like kind of interacts with other people's baggage. Like I like to say eighth house is like where your shit mixed up with my shit. And we just kind of have the swampy, the swampy situation where we have to kind of figure out what's yours and what's mine and how to kind of move forward with, you know, all of our shit basically.
Yeah,
it's a sticky place.
Yeah.
I feel like it's also grief for relationships. Like, you know, I think that sometimes we forget that when we break up with someone, like that's a mourning process. That is a grief process. And that is some of the shit that we do carry often into the next relationship. Mm-hmm. And how does that affect our intimacy? So I do think like the eighth house is sort of a gathering zone of all of that loss and sadness, even though it's not all bad. I mean, it's also other people's, like you said, resources. And I'm thinking again of sex work, actually, in terms of maybe what the other person is literally bringing materially to the equation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their sex toys.
Yeah, their sex toys. Yeah. Second house, eighth house stuff in relation to sex always makes me think of people who use, it's like, what is it? Financial domination, that type of specific dynamic. I remember I did an election once when I was still doing elections for a sex worker, a dominatrix who specialized in like financial domination. And there was a lot of second house, eighth house stuff in that business launch election. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is deeply fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is deeply fascinating. I just wanted to add though, to what you said, Eliza, about the eighth house and heartbreak and just how we're so transformed by that experience. And we also find hidden parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think it is a part of our self-actualization, even if a relationship doesn't last or we lose someone. Mm-hmm. It's like deeply transformative.
Yeah, it's very alchemical. Mm-hmm. And then how does all of that affect our sexuality at the end? You know, when there's so much grief, there's so much trauma. But
exactly. I mean, it squares the fifth house. So there's definitely that challenge there when how to sort of alchemize that pain into pleasure.
Well, and it's the gates of Hades too, that deep letting go, which all of us will have to face. Mm-hmm. Even around our own lives. But maybe there's more release into the sex. Surrender.
So in terms of the ninth house, that was not as elegant.
Moving on.
I was thinking the ninth house was like the light at the end of the tunnel of the eighth house. Like when you're in it in the eighth house, like you're in the swamp, you're kind of moving through difficulties. The ninth house is when you kind of finally get out and you can have clarity on everything you just went through. And there's perspective is probably my favorite word for the ninth. It's where the sun rejoices. It's where you can achieve some sort of clarity or knowing. And so I don't know why the image of like sexy nuns just popped in my head. I mean, I know why we're talking about the ninth house and sex, but like religious fetishes, you know, it's very much something that just popped up for me. But yeah, I think the ninth is the spiritual side of sex, right? It's like that transcendence that a lot of us crave, that can come through the act of having sex. And I think in general, the ninth house is about journeys and experiences that kind of change you, or maybe not change you, but inform your overall perspective or worldview. And so, the sex in relation to the ninth house, I think, can be about how sex connects to your beliefs and also just like the experience in and of itself. I think this is kind of where the fifth ties into the ninth, that trine, where it's like, it's just the fifth is kind of about the more somatic, physical experiences of pleasure and joy. Where I think the ninth is kind of that, it's a more spiritual extension of that. And I don't know. There's something about the ninth and sex that makes me think tripping on shrooms and like having sex on, it reminds me of like having sex on drugs, basically. It's like that spiritual, transcendent, And also just like experiential piece, I think, but it's of the mind. It's less of the body when it comes to the ninth.
Well, I love that that what you said about it being sacred too, like sex is prayer. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think of the witches who send sex spells, like who through masturbation, sex magic, who put sex magic maybe in the ninth house. But also it's so interesting thinking about, you know, how some people grow up in certain religious households and how that just like really interferes with their ability to find pleasure. And there's the shame that we bring into it. The shame is probably more eighth house territory, mm-hmm. but in terms of religious doctrines against sex, it's some of the dogma that we can find in the ninth.
Yeah. That's a really great point. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of goes hand in hand with that. It's like the dogma and the shame that can be placed on because of these belief systems. Then also like the spiritual transcendence and that experience mm-hmm. that can happen through sex too, which can like kind of lead you in some ways towards spirituality. There's a lot there with that.
This is a bit ridiculous, but I also, my first thought when we got to the ninth house was, what was that phrase in the 90s? Was it Club Med? Like sex on airplanes, basically? I might be confusing it.
Mile High Club?
Mile High Club, that's it.
That's what I thought of too. That's the first thing that popped in my mind as well. And also just sex with foreign people, like sex with people from different cultures and
mm-hmm. Different languages.
Yeah. Also, this reminds me of Hot for Teacher too. Like, you know, sex. I mean, not to say that not for like children, but for like, you know, college age and older. Just like, I don't know. That's something that popped up is like fucking your professor. Like something I never did, but cool fantasy.
Totally.
No, but that's a thing. Like people
it is a thing.
People have talked a lot about Eros in education, and like that is, I mean, Socrates and Plato, like, were lovers. So
that's such a great point. It is, that's a really good point.
Which can be a career move, right? To act on those true. Relationships, which definitely feeds right into the 10th house.
The 10th. Yeah. I mean, the 10th house. First thing that comes to mind is public sex, which probably isn't necessarily what we're talking about. But I think of the 10th house, I think of like the most visible part of the chart, like, you know, literally public and professional. But this could also be professional sex, you know, like people who are known for either having sex or their sex appeal. Sex as a career. I think that definitely comes up. I think, what else? I don't know. What's coming up with you guys?
Can you talk a little bit about the planetary placements as far as how sex and career overlap? Because I think that would kind of clarify for the audience, like, oh, how do I know I'm supposed to have a career in sex? Like, what actually would those planetary placements be? What would they look like? What those maybe even aspects would be?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is like the ruler of the fifth and the 10th. Okay. Because it's like, or maybe even the ruler of the 10th and the fifth, like the connection between the fifth and the 10th. This is not 10th, but I remember I talked to this pretty popular porn star once on Tinder, which is where I thought of that, you know, Jupiter in the first, well endowed, which he has. He actually has like a dildo made like out of like a mold of his penis. But he had a sixth house stellium and his like chart ruler was in the sixth. And it was like, oh yeah, like I think maybe the ruler of his 10th too was therefore in the sixth or something. But it was like so much of like everything kind of came for him. It was like work, you know, it's very much like a work thing. But yeah, I'm thinking like very also Venus, and the 10th could speak to that as well. But yeah, I'm thinking specifically connections between the 5th and the 10th. And for, there's a particular rising sign that there's a couple of rising signs that have that same planet ruling both houses. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different kind of ways that you can look at that. I think in general, like I think of the 10th house is what like our roles and our titles are, especially when planets are there, that kind of speak to what we're known for and again, like our titles. And so having Venus there, even maybe having the moon, or again, like the ruler of the 5th can kind of speak to like being known for sex in some ways.
It also makes me think how the 10th house is how we present ourselves to the world. So whereas the 4th house is, you know, kind of private and in some ways unadorned, the 10th house does remind me of, you know, you mentioned that the person who worked in porn, like it's the lights, it's the makeup you're wearing, it's the way that we've groomed ourselves to maybe to like woo somebody or to be presentable, to be appealing, mm-hmm. to be alluring. It's not like the 4th house is more vulnerable. The 10th house is what we're, how we're displaying ourselves for the world.
Yeah. It's like thirst traps. Posting sexy. Yeah. Like it's, yeah, exactly that. Like it's your dating profile even. It's like what you're, how you're presenting yourself. Yeah. Your, how you present your sex appeal, I guess, in a more public arena. I love that. Definitely so thirst traps.
Speaking of public arenas, the 11th.
Yeah,
house.
The 11th. Yeah, sex with friends, you know? I mean, this is also like we can just throw in orgies here, right? and our wider network, which makes me also think of like sex communities, you know, like communities of people who share maybe particular fetishes or just the BDSM community, right? Like that's very much a community, and there's definitely smaller communities within that. And it definitely overlaps with other, you know, sort of groups, but yeah, there's people who connect on that and people who have sex parties, you know, which maybe is a 5th house thing, but it's definitely an 11th house thing because usually sex parties happen with people within a community. Again, it's with people who know each other. I mean, I'm like a huge stan of sex parties. I think that they're like the best places in the world, honestly, because there's so much, the community aspect of it is just really lovely, you know, I don't know. I won't get into my love for sex parties, but, but yeah, but yeah, you know, yeah, it's just, I think when I think of the 11th house in regards to sex, it's like a little bit more detached, but not in a way that's like, you know, problematic necessarily. It just means that it's love that you can share on a wider scale with more people, and therefore like they can share with more people, and you know, so on and so forth. But yeah, that's kind of the main thing that comes up for me, is like sex with friends, which I think more people should do.
Okay, so then we're at the 12th house.
Ooh, secret sex.
Ooh, clandestine.
Yeah. You know, when I think of 12th house sex, yeah, I think of especially people with Venus in the 12th, and how it's often kind of secret. And maybe it's secret because I need to keep it a secret, you know what I mean? But maybe it's secret just in the sense that like it's just not something that most of the rest of this person's world or life like gets access to. It's a very personal, I think the 12th house is very personal in the sense that it's a very like behind the scenes place. It's not a visible place. And so, yeah, I think of sex on retreat. I think of, you know, I think of affairs a lot when I think of 12th house sex. And again, that's not to say that everyone, you know, like who has 12th house stuff is going to have affairs or anything, but it's what's unseen, you know, it's very kind of takes place behind the scenes and can also be really confusing in a lot of ways or just unclear and not, unclear things is a better word. Like I said, sex on retreat, sex in places that where you're just kind of totally disconnected from the rest of your normal day-to-day life to be 12th house stuff.
I also think it's a place where you can make a lot of mistakes in relationships and in love and in your sex life. Therefore, you have to keep it secret. Like you were saying, it's where affairs are had and things of that nature. But it's also a place of transformation. And it's another therapy house too, where if you do have these, you know, skeletons in the closet, or you are keeping these secrets, or you have made mistakes that need healing, and you get help, or you're able to transmute those processes in some way, shape, or form. It's where you can then again activate the fifth house and start having fun again and find love if that's what you're looking for, things of that nature.
Yeah, it's such a, I know what I was going to say, from what you were saying about like making mistakes. Yeah. I feel like it's the 12th house is really where paranoia comes in, as well as just like our mental health issues in general. So it could be, it could be where we have some mental health issues connected with sex, or also just like a lot of fears and paranoia. This is where Saturn rejoices. So, it can be where we kind of like, lose ourselves, you know, and therefore unable to really make clear decisions around sex, or kind of not being able to get out of your head too, can be a really 12th house thing when it comes to sex.
It is like, I think of a house classically known as the place of self-undoing. So like all of the things, all of our habits, all of our thought patterns that get in our own way when it comes to our ability to have pleasure. And that could be, it could absolutely be fear, paranoia. It could be obsessions. It could be fixations. It could be inhibitions. And I think there's so many ways that can come up, especially because we live in a culture where sex is still considered quite taboo. And even though that's changing, it's still so loaded. So I think our psychologies are so loaded around it.
That's a really good point. One other thing that came up for me is distance too for the 12th house and just long distance relationship, long distance sex. Again, this is the place of Saturn. Saturn rejoices, and Saturn is the farthest planet out that we can see. So yeah, this is something I experienced a lot over the past 2 years with Saturn in Aquarius, my Saturn return, Saturn moving through my 12th and trining my natal Venus and being in this very like long distance sort of relationship with someone, and realizing the beauty in distance too, and how, just time, like things taking more time and having to reckon with things from, again, this kind of detached, more mental space can actually be really helpful, you know, when it comes to working through relationship stuff. Long distance is another one, like just kind of the detachment and the removal, of the physical aspects, of sex because, yeah, 12th house is so, does kind of have that liminality quality to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to mention that liminality too, and how what's going on in the 12th can be in a real blind spot.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or unconscious.
Unless you're like a 12th house person and you just live there, because you're always kind of in that liminal space, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you definitely don't take the 12th house with you on a first date.
I just don't know how not to bring it on the first date.
Well, then that first date's not very successful, is it, guys?
I think the key when it comes to being like a 12th houser is to find people whose planets aspect your, or any dark house, you know, find people whose planets trine especially, can be really, really helpful because it helps you access those planets without it being like a harsh, or too intense. You know, I really love trines to dark house placements, in terms of synastry, because it's like, oh, I can access this without just like, again, like having the lights turned on, and kind of having that be really harsh. The trines and sextiles can be a lot more, useful, I guess.
Yeah, they act more as a dimmer. Mm-hmm, let's turn this on slowly.
Exactly.
Gradually. Yeah, we'll just put a candle to it. We'll leave the lights off.
I love that. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Kira. I feel like this was really fun to go around the houses, and it's a pleasure having you here on the show. Do you have any last pieces to add? And also within that, tell us where to find you and how to find Cusp and all of that.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I haven't done this before, like go through the houses in relation to sex. And I was like a little worried at first, like, can we do this? But we definitely did it.
We totally
I think
we did it
really well. Yeah.
Yeah. You brought it.
So yeah, thank you. Last words. I mean, I would say, when it comes to relationships and astrology or sex and astrology, like approach it from a very curious lens, you know. Don't think you know before you try it. Just like try it, and see. Yeah, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn. I would just say that. And I would say, when you're dating someone or even just talking to someone, have them download Cusp. Check out our compatibility reports, because that can be really fun. It can be really fun, especially just when you're in like the talking phase or like getting to know someone, to kind of have something to look at together. In terms of finding me and my work, theastrology.com, at theastrology on Instagram. And I have tons of, you know, workshops and webinars and stuff on my site. And I also have this membership community, the 11th house, which is really fun place for, like to say, astro nerds to gather and connect with other astro nerds. We have a lot of programming every month for that. We do workshops and yeah, lots of fun stuff there. And I have a podcast, The Astrology Show, we just started season 3, and that comes out twice a week now. Lots of fun convos with cool astrologers. And then for Cusp, we're Cusp Astrology. If you can just search us on the App Store, we're iOS and Android. Cusp, C-U-S-P. You can find us cusp.astrology on Instagram, Cusp Astrology on Twitter. Pretty sure Cusp Astrology on TikTok. Definitely follow us on the socials, because we post a lot. We post a lot of cool stuff about upcoming astro. Download the app. You get a lot of cool stuff the daily horoscopes alone are like definitely worth it, but the compatibility reports and our sign overviews are also just so well written by these incredible writers. So yeah, it's good to have an astrology app written by actual astrologers, believe it or not. It actually makes a difference. So yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Kira. Thank you so much for being here. It was so much fun. And then you can find Eliza Kestrel and I at cosmictonic.com. And our Instagram handle is at cosmictonic. And our Twitter is cosmic_tonic. And we'd like to thank everyone for being here. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.